Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. For recording this, isn't it? Get the wind.
No, it won't come out great. We'll try it.
Okay, so this evening is the Asala Puja, and definitely chilly. Quite surprisingly cool this evening. And the, of course, the Sala Puja is commemorating the Buddha's first teaching, in which he talked about dukkha. So, this is dukkha. But I was also thinking this, like Ajahn Chah. Can remember him teaching and just emphasizing that, you know, wherever there's dukkha, there'll also be sukha. Since wherever there'll be some kind of difficulty, suffering in some way, there's the possibility of happiness. And similarly, wherever there's sukha, you're going to find dukkha as well. And they're inextricably bound together. So tonight we have the dukkha of it being cold and windy, but there's also the sukkha of there's no mosquitoes. So you know, there's all the so these things can, a lot of it is what you look at, and of course, the mind tends to hone in on these things, in the sense of hones in on dukkha, and it's always going to be this way. It's everything's terrible, miserable, difficult, problematic. I'll never be happy again. But then it, you know, it does the same thing as you know, we experience sukha, we experience some happiness, some pleasure, some comfort, some ease, and you know, so, yeah, this is the way it should be. I'm sure it's gonna really last this time. I'm never gonna have to suffer again. And each one is a disappointment. Each one is a difficulty, a problem. So that the this way Lumpa Cha would always talk about the you know, the teaching of the Buddha's being above suffering and beyond happiness. Say, above pleasure, beyond pain, above good, beyond evil. Not being bound by these dichotomies, these poles that the human mind, human experience tends to circle around and fix itself to, so that the that sense of being able to go beyond those realms of good and bad, pleasure, pain, happiness, suffering, because there's always some kind of dukkha within that, and the that freedom from dukkha is there's in several places in the suttas the Buddha speaks of the goal of Nibbana. So this is peaceful, this is sublime, the complete ending of all suffering, of all dukkha. So that opportunity to really experience what is peaceful and liberating, what is sublime and beyond the complications of the world and the complications of the human mind. So of course we have to get there, and that's what the practice is all about. That's what the teachings are for, and of course that's what the Buddha gave his whole life for, really, after his liberation under the Bodhi tree, which was in the full moon of May, to determining to help others and help to figuring that there are beings with little dust in their eyes, there is this, it's like they say, the doors of the deathless are open, and that he's found a path to freedom, to liberation, to the deathless, he was willing to proclaim it, willing to teach. Of course, it wasn't necessary. It wasn't his first inclination. His first inclination is nobody's going to understand this, just be tiring and vexing to have to try to teach this and nobody understands. But that was also the insight and arising of compassion, that there are beings with little dust in their eyes, and he made the effort to go from Bodh Gaya to Sarnath, which is a couple hundred kilometers, so that's not a small effort. And then finding his fellow ascetics who he had practiced with before, and giving the teaching on the Four Noble Truths, and the Middle Way. And of course this Middle Way is both a middle way of practice as well as a middle way of view. In that sense of not holding to views of either nihilism or eternalism, the views of the way that the mind goes to various extremes, sort of absolute good, absolute evil, absolute right, absolute wrong, these absolutes that the mind latches onto and fails to understand causal processes, how things come to be, and how things cease, how things and this is what the Buddha saying, as long as one doesn't see how things come into being, then one will easily fall into an extreme view and thinking in terms of, well, it's all falling apart, it's all hopeless, and just falling, going into a nihilistic view. But then also when one fails to pay attention to how things do cease, it helps the mind to not fall into a view of permanence or solidity or eternalism. So this middle way of view, but then also a middle way of practice, a middle way of training, so that avoiding extremes of indulgence, so that if I just get what I want, make myself happy, grab the what is pleasurable while I can, or the extreme of a self-denial, self-abnegation, and practicing in those ways, that if I deny myself enough, then I'll protect myself from difficulty or suffering. Of course, those are extremes as well, extremes in terms of the ways of living, ways of practicing. And the Buddha pointing out a middle way that allows us to live skillfully and to create the well-being of right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. These aspects of training and even though the Buddha picks up and points to say dukkha, suffering, or discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, however one wants to translate it, it's a perspective that allows us to not be complacent, not get lost. But it is interesting that the all aspects of the way of training in this middle way are conducive to well-being and happiness. When we live our life with with right speech as a foundation, then we create the basis of, you know, our own happiness and the happiness of others. Or at least we don't create more suffering, don't create a whole lot of conflict. But that is, that's comfortable, that's pleasurable. To not be entangled in conflict and mistrust. Same with right action, right livelihood, our actions of body and speech being established in that which is trustworthy, is beautiful, is pleasing. It's pleasing to be with people who are considerate in their actions. And of course it's pleasing to be with ourselves when we've been skillful in living with others. There's aspects of the mental training of meditation, say right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. These are all aspects that are developing qualities of mind that allow the mind to be steady, clear, experiencing a certain brightness and happiness of mind, because it's the mind that is well trained in this way is a mind that it has an inner well-being, an inner contentment, an inner happiness. And of course that's what allows it to settle. So these contemplation of dukkha, it's not just to look at things in a negative way, or look at things in seeing everything as a calamity and then getting fearful and averse. It's looking at, because I mean, just the human tendency. We're so conditioned to prefer happiness to suffering, and we're constantly chasing it and trying to protect it, to bring up that contemplation of dukkha, seeing the unsatisfactoriness in that quest for, say, security, stability of happiness, and so that it's just being able to burst that bubble of assumption. But it doesn't mean that happiness and well-being doesn't play a role. These are tools that we have to learn how to use. Just learning how to use the tool of dukkha to reflect, to investigate, to challenge the mind, challenge our assumptions, challenge our habits, is where we it's easy to overlook the ways that we do create dukkha, or overlook the ways that we assume, say, our own rightness. And we think we're right just because we think it. And there's dukkha involved in that when we don't understand how we miss the big picture, or we miss the nuances and the details in our life. So using that tool of dukkha to see, is there dukkha, or how does that dukkha arise? How do I, am I missing something? That. So it's because in, there isn't, we're all understand that we don't want to suffer, and we don't. There isn't anybody who wants to suffer, but we get and it's just that it's like the Buddha pointing to, say, this problem of within our existence of tanha and avijja. So tanha, desire, craving, and avijja, ignorance, a lack of true knowledge. And one of them is bad enough, but when you have them working, the two of them working together, it's this double whammy that's really, really difficult to disentangle the heart from. And so that to be able to to be to use this tool of dukkha, this experience of dukkha, to highlight, is there some kind of craving functioning? Is there some kind of ignorance functioning? To ask those questions, to look, to check, to be circumspect, to understand, to recognize how that functions and what it does to us. So that contemplation from the very, say, the mundane aspect of the body being aging, sickness, illness, death, separate, and then, but then the on the mental level of the separation from the love, the association with the unwanted, the dislike, not getting what one wants, and then just the various aspects of these, how we create identity. The Buddha points to these as all being, being dukkha and being generated through our craving, our desire, and that creates, it's problematic. And those elements of just desire for sensual craving, and it doesn't have to be gross, but it's just that seeking pleasure, of comfort, stimulation, the stimulation of the senses, that experiencing sense, that feeling alive when one is experiencing sense contact, is a just seeing the way the mind moves toward that, and of course then begins to create the identity, or the preference, the protecting of what's pleasurable, the shrinking back from the unpleasant, the unwanted. And that's how craving works. So that to be able to understand that as a cause of dukkha, this craving. You know, there is these experiences of suffering. There is these experiences of difficulty, of what is unsatisfying or creates dis-ease within one's existence. But then, rather than just sort of blaming it and coming up with a story to justify it or why it should be that way, is to really understand the causal process. With this condition in place, this arises. Say, natural causal process that we have to be willing to investigate, understand, because all things arise because of a cause. And of course, this is that was Sariputta's insight just hearing a very, very brief teaching from Asaji, he entered the stream of Dhamma. It takes us a lot longer, but Sariputta was foremost in wisdom, and that was just that principle of the causal principle. Things arise due to causes; they cease when the cause ceases, and so that we can investigate that, we can understand it, we can penetrate it, and liberate our own hearts. And it's not beyond our capability. So that this investigation of the causal processes, how things come to be, and then how things cease. There is a cessation. Things do cease. If it was just sort of endless arising of dukkha, then that would be a problem. But the reality is that there is this opportunity for cessation. There is this opportunity for the coming to an end of dukkha. And we have to put the causes in place, and we have to approach it with an appropriate skill, an appropriate tool, not tools. And the Buddha points to the qualities of a giving, a giving up, a giving away, charcoal. It's a the habit of the mind is we tend to hold on to and cherish things, whether it's a mood or feeling or a possession, and to be able to willingly give it away, give it up. It's this quality of chakra. And chakra is it's very close to dana. It's in terms of giving, of generosity. And chakra is a giving as well. It's sort of like, but it's a giving away, a giving back. And just to be able to experiment with that in the mind, just being able to give and not hold on, and just give it up. And that giving up a mood, something that we see that we delight in, or something that we see that we're irritated by, and to give it up. And it says there's a kind of an openness of heart, a generosity of heart that is required in order to do that or to accomplish that. Quality of patinisago, as the Buddha points to the four, chako, patinisago, mutti, analio, as the Buddha points to these in the Dhammacakka Sutta, as the the qualities of heart that accomplish the experience of cessation of dukkha, and these are. There's not something that you wait to magically appear. These are things we have to experiment with or bring into our perspective and consciousness. So how do we do that? How do we use those qualities? How do we put that foremost into our minds? And it's just reminding ourselves, encouraging the mind. And that sense of giving up, of relinquishment. And particularly that relinquishment of self. Relinquishment of self, self-identity, self-cherishing, self-obsession, self-proliferation, just the world revolving around that sense of me, and to just experiment, relinquishing it, putting it down. And of course, we pick it up again, but it's just, if we keep, that's why it's a practice, it's a training. Using those tools, mutti, freedom, release, being able to release things, releasing their moods, releasing that sense of me, releasing. The releasing fear, releasing worry, freeing it, giving it the opportunity to cease. So we keep experimenting with it, keep working with it. Analayo is to, it's like a, not sticking, not holding, not things don't stick to the mind. That mind of analio is one of where they. It's not that one doesn't experience anything, doesn't experience seeing that this is interesting. That's pleasurable. That's difficult, but it doesn't. It's like it doesn't stick. It doesn't land. It doesn't proliferate. It doesn't take root and take hold in the mind. And so one has to train the mind to let things, to be attentive, to be alert, and to not let them stick like that in the mind. So seeing it, being able to shed the moods of getting excited, getting fearful, getting worried, getting upset, having a view, having an opinion, just being able to shed. It's like the those waterproof sprays that you get and spray on cloth, and then you go out in the rain and the raindrops just sort of shed off it immediately, doesn't sort of absorb into the cloth. That's what happens with the mind when we turn to that quality of anālaya. So that allows that experience of cessation, of dukkha. Of course, but that requires our training, our practice, and it's just this Noble Eightfold Path, this practice of right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. These are the training that it seems so ordinary. That ordinariness belies its ability to really liberate the heart. As it is, it comes back to this middle way of practice, middle way of training, middle way of not getting caught in the extremes. And this is what the Buddha's first teaching that we, the Buddha sharing his insight, and I think that I think it's important to recollect that this teaching the Buddha's really just quite recently fully liberated, and just this incredible brightness and faith and confidence in the liberation that he's experienced himself, and that wish, that desire to share it with others and to give the opportunity to others. And he's sharing this insight out of compassion, but he's also sharing it in a sense of it's still so bright and clear and present in his heart that he's giving there's an immediacy to what he's trying to share. There's an immediacy to the tapping into the essence of his liberation. So that, I think it's just so important to keep coming back to this first teaching. And really try to allow it to penetrate one's own heart. So picking it up in that, with that I was speaking with the the monks this afternoon after the Patimokkha, and emphasizing the quality of faith. So that picking up this teaching on the Four Noble Truths with a heart of faith, that, you know, realizing, recognizing that this teaching that the Buddha has just been enlightened to, been awakened to, this is it's really the essence of how to say how the Buddha himself was liberated, but how he sees we can all be liberated with that. So that to not just to recite it or to pick it up and then go on to something else, but really bring it into the heart, that open echo, that lead it inwards, so that it has the allow it to settle in the heart, so it's giving it the power to free the heart. There's a certain act of faith, and that's required. In that sense, not just believing but opening the heart to these teachings, and really giving it the opportunity to transform the heart. Because it is, you know, on a certain level, it's a very simple, straightforward teaching. But we tend to skip over things and don't allow it to penetrate. So that allow this middle way, this middle view, middle practice, allow it, give it the chance to transform the heart, so that we come to truly come to a place of relinquishment, of freedom, of release. Yeah. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.